The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. He's always in the upper left. It's Professor Dave Chow.
Oh, it's me. Oh, pleasure to be here, as always.
Excellent. Hey, how's it? New garage workout for you during the Dream Cruise?
It's my man cave now. It's comfy in there. It's wide. I can actually not touch the walls with my two extended arms.
Oh, that's pretty awesome, man.
It's nice. So
I was looking at a lot of your posts. It looks like you really did get a lot of drives out of that car this year.
Not really. Only two nights.
Gosh,
I just took a lot of photos. That's awesome.
Well, a lot of pictures is fun, too. Did you see anything interesting out there this year?
No, actually, I only went out Wednesday and Thursday. I stayed off the roads on Friday, and I definitely stayed off the roads on Saturday because I knew it was going to be a zoo. I laid low.
Excellent. So. Professor Jim Tubbs is here with us today.
Hello. Hello, Matthew. How are you?
He was just telling us how he really, really likes in-person teaching.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as opposed to everything online, I think it's
right.
It's more warm and comfy.
Okay. That's a great way to put it. I love
warm
it.
Warm and comfy.
Mm-hmm.
You make it sound like a sweat sock.
Well, it's been fairly warm in the basement of Briggs this week.
I was going to say, I bet it's been warm in the great Briggs building, too. Absolutely.
Let's see what he thinks after 12 weeks.
Well, then it will be cold, Stephen.
And the students won't be as warm and comfy either.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not.
But yeah. You will be.
I will be, yeah.
It's a good point, though, Jim, because we were just talking the other day that very busy week as per the first week of fall semester pretty much every year, but a lot of real wonderful goodwill from students and a lot of respectfulness from them. Yeah. They're understanding the gravity of the situation, too. The pessimist in our department remarked, how long will the honeymoon last? And I'm like, let's just see how far we can push it.
When I walked into the building on Tuesday, it was long before my class started. And there was a young man in the stairwell. And I just said in passing, you know, well, how is it being back, you know, in in-person classrooms? He said, it is great. It is wonderful being in an in-person classroom. And that kind of buoyed me for the rest of the day.
That's awesome.
Have a student saying that.
It should also say something to administrators at the whole year at any institution that, you know, it's just not clear that online learning really is the same, right? In-person learning. So to the extent that they want this to become sort of the wave of the future, it's like, well, we now have empirical evidence that in fact, right. This is not necessary, which isn't to say people can't do it well. That's true.
But students have a real choice, that's not usually it.
Right. Those, of course, being the dulcet tones of Professor Beth Oljar, who observed a little bit ago that it was wonderful, but extremely tiring. And I could not agree more with both of those points.
I mean, I know I haven't taught 5 days a week in a while, but to be this tired after the first week of classes. But I'm assuming that we'll build up tolerance, so to speak. Things will seem less tiring, right, as the semester progresses. But I'm sure that hope is also in vain.
Well, there's some sort of inoculation analogy that you're trying to make versus the, you know, once I learn to live on 1 or 2 hours of sleep
for several
weeks in a row.
Yeah.
That's awesome. We were just getting some beautiful pictures, well, beautiful moving images of Professor Heather Hill's pup. Where did he go? Did he run away?
Yeah, he's apparently camera shy.
So. Oh, okay. No, he's not. He's a ham.
He's real sweet, right, Stephen? But he has some issues occasionally.
He's got some sour in him, too, if I have my... Oh, I mean, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, he does. I mean, he's a rescue, and so he has some... PTSD, I think.
Baggage.
Can't take that away from him. How was your first week, Heather?
Good. Yeah, but tiring. You have to get back into the routine. So, and Stephen and I are behind on training for the half marathon. So we're going to have to pick it up a notch. So we're going to get even more tired probably.
Wow, we've got a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do.
Well, now, which half marathon are you folks doing?
The Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was like the Punchki run again where you had an incentive at the finish line. That's all.
Yeah, that's just a 5K, so...
yeah, but the beer and the Punchki makes it seem like a 1K.
Yeah, it's we're gonna, we did it 2 years ago, so we're gonna try to get up to 13.1, Stephen.
You better figure out how far it is you have to run.
Yeah, I don't remember. 13.1. It's half a 26.2, right, exactly. So it's 13.1.
So do I need to be there at the finish line with a beer and a punch key to offer encouragement?
Yes.
As long as it's not a prune punch key. I don't like
that. Okay, all right.
Yeah. Dave, you can be at the finish line handing out the 0.0 car stickers. My all-time favorite there.
Darn right.
Continuing around the horn here, Professor Dan Maggio is here with us, and he's going to tell us all about what it's like for the first organization to be back to hopefully a lot more in-person stuff, Dan.
That's the plan. But I think just trying to navigate, everybody's in a different situation. So sure. Difficult to lead with one voice, but we're trying. It's crazy at work.
Yeah, so. That sounds about right.
So are we, speaking of being glad to be back in person, we have a target date for us getting back, because I've been stocking up on cookies for 18 months now. And...
You know, the plan is to make sure that the mean average temperature in Briggs is below 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
That'll be in about 3 days. We're getting into winter. That's going to get worse.
We'll just open all the windows.
It'll be okay. It'll be okay. But we do hope to be back into the studio sometime in the coming weeks. Stay tuned.
Excellent.
Professor Stephen Manning is coming to us from Trattoria Manning.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Good. I'm exhausted after the first week, too, as you can imagine. We did do, by the way, we did the Dream Cruise run up in your neck of the woods, Matt.
Oh.
You know, it ends at Shrine. Well, it starts at Shrine, but it ends there, too. Kind of a nice run through those neighborhoods.
That's cool.
I guess it's north of Shrine. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fun. Mm-hmm.
Was that an organized marathon, or just were you just running through the neighborhood?
It's organized.
Yeah, it was just a 5K. Yeah.
Oh, it is a 5K.
Yeah, well, it was organized. Yeah, my nemesis was there. I won't go into that.
Mind you, you folks were probably faster than traffic, so I mean.
No.
Yeah,
well it's interesting, because it is on Saturday, the actual day of the Dream Cruise. I know there are days, you know, on either side of that where cars show up, but they do have to, Royal Oak Police mostly have to clear the clear, because part of the run is on Woodward itself. You run up, right. It's by the 13 mile or 12.
So they took a break from giving out tickets.
12, and you go up a ways, then turn around and come back on Woodward. So you know they have to do the police have to do a good job as they usually do. You know, blocking off traffic and stuff for the duration of the run. So
that's cool.
It was fun. It's a fun run. And 2 years ago, they didn't do it last year. Of course, 2 years ago we finished. And you know, these things, there's usually bottled water, bananas, bagels, and things. 2 years ago, there was Wingstop wings, which is an odd thing to have at the end of a race, you know. But we ate them, and they were terrific, actually.
That's awesome.
Well, it's better than in the middle of the race, giving you wings.
That's true.
Yes.
Dangling donuts in front of you.
So. Professors, we're being joined by a guest panelist today. Professor Sigurd Street is here from the Department of English, fresh off her media tour for having won the Faculty Mission Award this last year. Congratulations, Sigurd.
Yay! Not the mission. I'm not getting the lamp. I'm still deeply disappointed. It's not the lamp.
It's not the lamp?
It's not the lamp.
Oh, but it's the Agora Ex Missione Award.
No, it's the achievement. No.
Achievement Award.
Oh, what am I thinking?
I'm an overachiever.
That's awesome. That's even more awesome.
Yeah, that is actually more awesome. And I'm sorry I conflated the two. It's very well known in Detroit Mercy circles that there's the LAMP Award and then there's other awards. I mean, it's pretty well known, actually. But we're very, very happy to have you here, Sigrid. How was your first week?
Hot, exhausting, feels like 5 weeks.
Come home, take a shower immediately.
Yes, exactly.
Pretty much. Go into the garden, dig in the weeds, become human again.
Unbelievable. Well, we're very, very happy to have you here, Sigrid. And this is a program where you send us questions about anything. You stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us the questions in a number of ways, emailing us at atp@udmercy.edu. Find us on Facebook or Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. We have a listener sent in set of questions from over the summer here. Hello, profs. For some reason, the U.S. Capitol building has been on my mind. Let's learn. Passing is whatever you want. Imagine writing an exam for your student.
Wow.
That's awesome. These questions are from Ben Foudy of Norfolk, Virginia.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben,
for sending in these questions. Let's see what we can do here. Oh, my. How many buildings make up the Capitol complex?
1, 2, 3.
Jim, seven. You were there over the summer.
Seven. One,
two, many.
Three. Six.
Four, let's see. I'm counting on this thing.
Three house office buildings. 5, 6, 7.
16. How's about that? I'm going to go big.
8.
There's a lot of counting going on. And since Kendra's not here, and she's the one that usually throws the dart at the dartboard, I'm giving it to Professor Chow. It says here it's 17 buildings the entire Capitol complex. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, they're including the conservatory and all that stuff, too, I guess.
I believe they are, because this next question kind of leans in that direction. Which non-legislature buildings are located within the complex? There are 5 of them. Let's see if we can name 2.
Conservatory, the Library of Congress, mm-hmm. Supreme Court building.
Yep.
And the men's room. Oh.
Jim already got us there, but we can't forget the Botanic and National Garden.
Okay.
Be nice to forget the Supreme Court for a while, but.
Yep. The 2 other ones on the list are Visitor's Center. Always important.
Yeah. That's called a men's room, isn't it?
Does that count as a building?
And even though I know you're thinking the next thing I'm going to say is gift shop, it's even better. The power plant. Don't forget facilities.
Oh, yeah. That's can't forget too. The power plant.
Oh, dear Lord. I mean, okay.
One of the buildings in the U.S. Capitol complex is named for a former House Minority Leader, who, of course, was from the great state of Michigan. Who's that?
Not Sam Rayburn. The Rayburn building.
Well,
think.
That's the only house building I can think of. Conyers.
Okay, who else?
I'm fascinated by this.
Levin? Who else?
Vandenberg?
I could give it away in like 2 seconds by saying former House Minority Leader from Michigan, who rose quite quickly to the presidency.
Gerald Ford.
Yeah, it was Jerry Ford.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
I said Ford.
Did you? I'm very hard of hearing, so I appreciate your patience.
Yeah. Appointed vice president would have been a reasonable clue.
There we go.
I was going to go Joe Mendy, but that wasn't going to fly, so.
Another Joe Mendy.
Another Joe Mendy thing.
The Capitol Power Plant produces the most something in Washington, D.C. What is it?
Hot air?
I have to give it to both of you. I think it's good enough. You know me and partial credit. Right? It's a carbon footprint. It's actually carbon-based emissions. Yeah, so go for it. The Capitol Power Plant's cornerstone had another job before it became that cornerstone in 1909. What was it before?
What, like a keystone to an arch or something like that? Was it something architectural?
Podium, lectern.
Is it a big coal hod? I mean, instead of...
getting like closer there, it was a part of something else.
A pedestal for a monument.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Oh. It was the pedestal for an 1841 statue of Washington. They took the statue to the Smithsonian and they used the other rock for the cornerstone. Pretty cool.
Recycling. Ooh.
Recycling.
I think George would have approved of that.
Absolutely. Don't forget, folks, reduce, reuse, recycle is meant to be in that order because recycling is the last chance.
Well, now there's also refuse. Or no.
You're listening to Ask the Professor from University of Detroit Mercy. We're grateful for those listeners who submitted questions for this week's episode.
and we invite you to send us your questions at atp@udmercy.edu. Now, let's return to our host, Matt Mayo, with more questions for the panel.
What is the Capitol Dome? What substance is the Capitol Dome made out of?
Marble.
Meringue. No.
Lego bricks. Lego.
Copper. Copper?
Copper's the closest we've gotten, yeah, but it isn't some, copper.
It's granite.
It's not going to be marble. That would be too heavy.
Well, like, gold leaf?
Like white limestone or?
You know, aluminum? It's multiple pieces of cast iron, if you can believe it.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
How frugal.
Now, I'm not counting out the possibility for copper and, you know, gold leaf at some other layer, but the, you know, superstructure is cast iron.
Over panda skin. Oh.
Ooh, here's a good one. Let's see if we can go to 50% on this. The Capitol Rotunda contains 8 paintings. What are the paintings of or the event that's being painted in the 8 paintings? Can we get 4 of them?
Washington crossing the Delaware.
Are any of them Bob Trenton Ross River. Paintings?
The Trenton River.
Actually, I don't think the Trenton one is on the list.
Signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, John Trumbull's signing of the Declaration is one of them.
Okay. Probably like a George Washington portrait, possibly.
You know what? I'll give it to you because I'm so generous. It was General Washington resigning his commission, also by John Trumbull.
Right. The cracking of the Liberty Bell.
Is a Lincoln on there or one of them?
Nope, Lincoln is not one of them. Mm.
Any of them on black velvet?
Any of them glow under black light?
We got it at Spencer's cheap.
What about the Civil War? Is there a Civil War battle?
There isn't. I think it's safe to say, for the only hint that I really can come up with, that these are all pre-colonial, or pardon me, at the level of colonial up to the Civil War style events.
Like the Mayflower landing or something like that? Yeah. Yeah,
actually, I'm going to give you that one.
There's one out in a field somewhere, but I can't think of what it depicts.
Dave, I'm giving it to you. One of them is called The Embarkation, which is the Pilgrims. So that one is actually up there.
Okay,
you just need one more.
What about the first Thanksgiving?
The natural segue,
right? After the embarkation. Okay.
What about
you gotta eat?
Dogs playing poker? Is Hamilton in one of those? Thinking back to the beginning of, let's see.
You all are pieces of work. Let's see if I start narrowing it down by giving some away. The Battle of Saratoga.
Okay.
The Battle of Yorktown, including the surrender of Cornwallis.
They have the Boston Massacre there?
Nope. They should, though. That would be great.
Yeah.
The Landing of Columbus.
The whitewash.
Needs repainting.
Yep, which is, let's be serious, in direct contrast to the baptism of Pocahontas, which is also in the Capitol Rotunda.
Oh.
And last but most certainly not least, the one we didn't get, Discovery of the Mississippi, with the word discovery being used very liberally.
You know, why aren't Lewis and Clark, speaking of rivers, why aren't Lewis and Clark there?
It's true. It's a true statement. Those are the paintings in the Capitol Rotunda.
Who's interior decorator? I want to know.
We need a committee on that. I mean,
yes, we do. I think that you all know this one like the back of your hand. One of those paintings that I just mentioned actually appears on U.S. currency. Which one?
Signing of the Declaration?
Yeah, that's on the $2 bill. Everybody's favorite. Oh, my gosh.
We need to rotate that art. Seriously, they need a committee of some kind to oversee.
Need an update.
Ben has a nice little commentary here, and Sigrid, we actually get quite a number of these where we get questions, and then there's a little parenthetical on the side. If you want more art on the Capitol that was probably in poor taste, even when it was generated, be sure to look up Daniel Boone and the Indians. Oh. It's like, oh, thanks for that. Sheesh. How many Confederates are in the Capitol Statuary Hall?
Four.
Let's three. See.
We're going to have to go north of four.
Oh.
Six.
It's more than six.
Eight. Six and a half.
9 3/4.
All right, wait a second. Are we doing a same game parlay, you know, bet for this? It's eight, unfortunately. It is eight statues. Zebulon Vance, Wade Hampton, Uriah Rose, Joseph Wheeler, James George, Jefferson Davis, Edmund Smith, and Alexander Hamilton Stevens.
Okay.
He was, of course, Jim. Wasn't he the vice president of the Confederacy? Forgive me. Why am I asking Jim? I don't know.
He was the Civil War era governor of North Carolina.
There you go. I think I was looking at Jim because of this next question, which I think you responded to a little earlier. One room in the Capitol building is named after a former and very influential Republican Michigan senator who was in the Senate from 28 to 51.
Arthur Vandenberg.
Vandenberg, yes. I read Vandenberg and I thought Vandalay from Seinfeld, so I'm going to have to try to keep that out of my mind.
He was a thorn in Eleanor's flesh, too, until she won him over at the UN.
Mm-hmm. Just for fun, let's talk about legislatures outside the United States for a minute or two. Of the 200 members that make up the Czech Chamber of Deputies, how many in the year 2021 are made up of the Pirate Party?
What?
30.
Yeah.
How many seats does the 30. Pirate Party have? Is that actually the question?
For the record, a bunch of you jumped on it relatively close. It's 22 of 200, the third largest represented party in the legislature.
Whoa. Wow, the Pirate Party.
I wonder what their platform is.
Do they wear eye patches?
I think that their platform is when they watch movies, they're all rated R.
How does that?
Oh. The motto was a whore matey.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. Ahoy, matey. That's the motto. They drink wine.
Walk the plank.
There are four other places. Holy smokes. Everybody better hold on to their butts. The Pirate Party is actually an international party.
Of course.
How many other places will you find Pirate Party members in legislatures?
Oh, dear Lord.
Well, Slovakia?
Poland?
We know we've got the Czech Republic. So that's one of them. But how many other places? Slovakia is not
five.
One of them.
Eight.
Oh. Germany has one. I don't think they're in parliament.
Well, it says here that it actually is four, Jim. Okay. So I've got Czech Republic, Iceland. That's six out of 63 reps.
Wow.
In Luxembourg, it's two out of 60. And for the piece de resistance... They are actually represented on the EU by three representatives.
Ooh,
really?
Unbelievable.
That's surprising.
For the record, if you're wondering what they support, mostly it surrounds freedom of expression, free flow of ideas and knowledge, maximum transparency, direct democracy, and open content through copyright and patent reform, specifically with regard to net neutrality.
And lots of rum.
And lots of rum.
And pillage.
That's right, and pillage.
Wow, great questions, Ben. Thanks a lot for sending those in.
Those are good.
That was awesome. Sigrid, thanks again for joining us. We always come to the close, although not too quick of a close today, of our episode by going down a list of what we call the imponderables. We used to call it the favorite game when we were little, but this is way more fun.
Imponderables.
Yeah, they're imponderables.
It makes us think every now and then.
Can you tell everybody out there in listener land what your favorite or maybe most remarkable black and white movie would be?
Ooh.
Casablanca.
Good choice.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, I'd have to go with that too. Mm.
Does The Wizard of Oz count?
Only
only partly in black and white.
I think Citizen Kane, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to go Citizen Kane.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
Abbott Costello Meet the Wolfman or something like that. I mean, I don't
know. Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, Marty.
Creepy. Yep.
Marty in Black and White? Oh, yeah, it is.
Yes. Uh-huh, yeah.
Yep, that's right.
On the Waterfront, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm a big Brando fan, which is why I didn't particularly enjoy the movie, but...
Well, we could have gone all the way back to, like, The Artist back, was it, a half dozen years, you know?
That's right.
Or Wings.
Are you at all a black and white movie fan, Sigrid?
Not really. Sorry.
That's okay. That's all right. I probably would have said something along the lines of It's a Wonderful Life. I'm thinking about like a movie I would have seen that hasn't been remade or anything. And also remembering that funky fad in the 80s where they were colorizing black and white movies.
Classic movies.
Yes.
Thanks, Ted Turner. Not.
What's ironic about that, by the way, if you really want your eyes open, go check out YouTube, is that the colorization that they can do today is darn disturbing. Like, it looks like it's reality being filmed in the modern day. But back then, it was as if you gave a three-year-old a box of crayons, and it was just weird. I remember seeing Gone with the Wind, you know, like ultra enhanced or something. It was just weird. Just weird.
Just don't do it.
Well, you're not in favor of going backwards and changing things that have been made in movies, Dave?
No, because back then it's like you actually had to understand like your black and white composition within the frame.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so I mean, you know, there's an art form to figure out black and white.
Yeah.
So
I'm just glad somebody brought up Hitchcock. So thank you for that, Heather. That's it's a big thumbs up in my book.
Thumb Like It Hot. That's a great, I'm pretty sure that's
There
you go.
That's a good one.
Well, professors, I'm afraid we've reached the end of what this group of questions can teach us. So the time has come to say goodbye. Stephen.
Bye.
Dan.
Goodbye.
Heather.
Bye-bye.
Beth.
Goodbye.
Jim.
Al Peterson.
Dave.
See ya.
And Sigrid.
Bye.
Now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the... No, it's not. It's transcribed across all of our homes and places of business. But we're usually housed in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville. And our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mile.